The Next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The Next CMO is sponsored by Planful for Marketing, a leading marketing performance management solution that automates marketing planning, financial management, and ROI optimization. And hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, an experienced CMO, CEO, board member, and executive advisor. Hey, in this episode of the Next CMO podcast, we're actually going to interview me. This is an opportunity for me to pass the torch for now, and I am thrilled to introduce the new host of the Next CMO podcast, my very old friend. He's not that old, but we've known each other for many years, Scott Todaro. So Scott, welcome to the show. Here's the keys to the show. Go for it.
Thank you, Peter. Well, it's an honor to take it over from you. I mean, only 118 episodes, but I get it. You're very busy. You got a big job. You got hundreds of people working for you now. But what we'll do is I'll keep the seat warm for you. And when you're ready to come back, it'll be here. And hopefully you'll join us from time to time on some of these episodes. It'll be good. Maybe we can tag team a couple of these guests and really get a lot of, squeeze everything we can out of them. So
give them the old rope-a-dope.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We know we can do that. But so today what I'd like to do, just for the very first episode that I'm going to host here, is interview you. And, you know, having known you for 23 years and just watching your career from the sidelines and also participating with you, it's been remarkable. And I think, you know, CMOs out there can learn a lot from you. You probably already have, having read your book, watched the podcast, any of the webinars that you've done over
time. It's our book, Scott, by the way. So you and Dan are equal co-authors on the book. So yeah. Just so everybody knows.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, it that's fine. So, but look, you've written a lot of great content out there, blogs of like over 200 blog posts, all to help CMOs. So, you know, talking to you, there's nobody better that we could have turned it over to as far as asking these types of questions. So what I'd like to do is just start us out with a little chronological timeline. And then if it would be great if you could kind of fill in, you know, some of the things that you may think will help other CMOs as they're trying to figure this out on their journey. I know that you, after you left Boston College, you went to IBM and that was kind of the starting point for you. So tell us about that.
Yeah, that was an interesting time because that was back in the 80s. In 87, I graduated from Boston College with degrees in physics and computer science. People used to say to me, well, what in the world are you going to do with that? I used to tell people that, well, I knew I wasn't going to go on in physics. My dad was a PhD physicist, and I was not nearly, and still am not nearly as smart as he was. So I said, well, I'm probably not going to do that. And I used to joke with people. I'd say, well, I'm going to do anything as long as I don't have to sell something, which I thought was like the worst punishment in the world because I had this image of used car salesmen's plaid pants, white shoes, that kind of thing. Little did I know that that would soon become my own fashion vibe. I decided I didn't want to sell anything, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had a great advisor from Boston College who used to help me every week look in the newspaper when that was a thing for job opportunities. And he came up with an idea and he said, hey, I have a former friend former student who works for IBM, and she's a systems engineering manager now. And it's like a pre-sales SE kind of job. And he said, I think you'd be good at that. So I said, okay, cool. And so I flung in it a resume at IBM and then heard many weeks later from them, had a bunch of interviews. And in the end, they said to me, this sounds really cool, and we really like you, and we're wondering if you'd actually be interested in a job in marketing instead. And I said, oh, marketing. I literally had no idea what marketing was. Never took a marketing class. Still haven't taken a marketing class. And I said, sure, you know, that sounds pretty good to me. And it was a job at the time. Little did I know, I show up for my first day of work, and they, back in the day when you did onboarding, there wasn't all this, you know, fancy web-based stuff. Literally, they showed up with a 5-foot stack of white binders and said, read this. So I'm going through all the binders, and there's a bunch of stuff on IBM products, and there's a bunch of stuff on financial stuff, which seemed interesting to me. And then there's a bunch of stuff on sales. And I'm about 3 weeks in, and I realize that, holy cow, when they said marketing, IBM actually means sales. I'm in a sales job. And it was the freakiest thing. I was embarrassed. I didn't want to tell my family, who were a bunch of scientists, that I was in sales. But that's how I got my first job. And I accidentally showed up in the wrong place, effectively. And I started in a sales job in IBM. And I was there for 5 years. And it was a great experience. But for a while, I thought it was the most embarrassing thing, and I was going to quit. But I decided to stick it out. So sorry if I over-answered, Scott. No, that brought back lots of memories for me.
That's perfect. And for any of the salespeople that watch this podcast, please don't take any offense. So I don't think there are any salespeople. In fact, probably the marketing people are happy that you are phrasing it that way. All right. So you went on, we met, you went to a bunch of companies, you rocketed up into executive positions and Engage. And then after that, we met at ATG, and you were the senior director of product marketing to begin. And then you picked up a product line that you did there at ATG. And then that transitioned over PerformaWorks to your first CMO position, where you were running all of marketing for an early stage company. And I think the great thing about your experience, Peter, is that you have the early stage companies and you have very large companies. And, you know, talking about, you know, what that early stage is versus when we get later in your career with some of the larger CMO positions you had.
So Scott, we should go back first, and we should talk about my first job in marketing.
Oh, okay.
Because it was ridiculous. So I ended up, I worked for IBM in sales for about 5 years, and I got a job working for a public company. It was about a $500 million public company at the time in the Boston area called PictureTel. They did video conferencing when it used to be like refrigerator size pieces of hardware that you needed to do video conferencing. So I was there doing, you know, basically alliance stuff and then business development. I never had a job in marketing, but I remember I ended up working on a bunch of presentations for the GM of one of the divisions. I'm saying, hey, I don't like the way marketing is positioning this stuff. Can I come up with my own idea? And he really liked what I did. And then one day he shows up in my office and says, hey, I just fired the head of marketing for unrelated issues, right? But he fired the head of marketing for this division. And he said, will you take the job? And I'm like, okay. And literally my first job in marketing was running marketing for a division of a public company, which is like criminal, right? It made no sense in the world. But I did it. And that's how literally I got my first job in marketing, and how I learned to figure stuff up out along the way, because I had no right to do that job.
How old were you?
I was curious. You know, I was probably late 20s, okay. Something like that. You know, I was probably 28, maybe 29 at the time. But yeah, it was an interesting gig.
Oh, geez. Well, you know, I learned something about you today. I didn't realize that's where they moved you at PictureTel. So we're on transition to Engage, ATG, and PerformaWorks.
Yeah. So that was PerformaWorks was a little startup. It was kind of a restart, and it was my first opportunity to sort of run my own show as the head of marketing. And it was interesting because I'd done a go-go internet company back in the late 1990s during the internet bubble. And that was a public company. So I joined it and went public the next week. It was sort of a crazy rocket ride through this thing. And I spent a lot of time as the chief of staff for the CEO of that company. So when that CEO left when the company exploded, and then a few years later, Scott and I were working together at a great company called ATG that ended up being sold to Oracle. And the CEO called me up and said, hey, I'm taking over this company that we're going to do a restart on, and will you come be my head of marketing? And that was my first opportunity to sort of be the guy who was the head of marketing for a company. It was a small company. We were probably 30 people at the time, something like that. And I said, absolutely, and dove in. And that was an amazing experience, again, to kind of figure things out.
Yeah. Well, you have to figure out a lot of things when you're early stage. How many years was that company in business before you joined, Peter? Do you remember?
Yeah, they were around for a while. They were around for maybe about 10 years.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was an interesting deal. They were a services company, they ended up got a big investment from a venture capital firm who saw it as an opportunity to turn it into basically a very early SaaS company. So they brought in my boss, who was as the CEO, and then he sort of rebuilt the whole team. So he brought me in as the head of marketing. Again, it was about 10 years old at the time, but we basically relaunched and sort of reset the whole company when I got there, which was almost like creating a startup from ground zero, although it had a product, it had a couple of customers, and it had about 10 years of history. So it was a wild story.
So you went from this little small company to ScanSoft, which was a public company, which got bought by Nuance, which became an enormous company. So if you could talk a little bit about that transition of running marketing at a company that, you know, had a lot of legs and you had to do a lot of growth. I think you had something you told me about 100 acquisitions over the time you were there. I mean, that's not an easy task for a CMO to get all those brands together.
That was a complicated beast. So when I did this startup, and again, that was my first marketing show. And then we ended up selling it. So it was not the most exciting financial outcome in the world. I think I might have got, you know, a train ticket or something like that. You know, I got basically nothing for the thing, but it was a soft landing, as we called it. So we were kind of running out of money, we're trying to raise money back in about 2004, which is a really difficult time in venture. So we ended up selling the company, I was briefly stayed with the acquired company, but I knew I wasn't going to stay. And I got a call from a former colleague of mine who had been at a company called Speechworks. It was a speech recognition company doing basically voice response systems for telephones. And they were acquired by this company, ScanSoft. And he was the CMO of this relatively small company. They made him the GM of the division once it was required. And he said he needed to replace himself. So he brought me on board as the head of marketing for this division of this company. That's how I joined. At the time, we were probably $175 million in revenue. We were about 600 employees. I spent 13 years there. Ultimately, the company, I actually renamed the company to Nuance back in about 2006. It grew to $2 billion in revenue. We had somewhere over 15,000 employees at one point. Then ultimately, I did a bunch of jobs there. I was the GM of two different product businesses, and then ultimately they asked me to be the CMO. So I was the CMO there for about 5 years, which was a great experience. And as you said, we ended up acquiring 100 companies while I was there. So I did a lot of work, you know, combining companies and trying to rationalize brands and things like that. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So talk to me about the challenge of trying to stitch 100 brands together and position the company and reposition the company each time you have some of these new technologies come into your overall portfolio.
Yeah, it was interesting, Scott. We had sort of four eras of repositioning of the company.
And I used to be able to rattle them all off. But when I started, we were really this sort of productivity software company because it was a spin out of Xerox. And the basic company positioning was productivity without boundaries. So it was kind of a lame. I didn't like the positioning. Sorry, Robert, the guy who did it. He's a good guy. And then I repositioned the company as basically a customer experience company called, and the positioning was the experience speaks for itself. And it was about sort of creating great customer experiences with voice, ultimately positioned it to more of a AI company, sort of later in its period. And it was, the positioning was reinventing the relationship between people and technology. And there might've been one other along the way. And the reason I bring this up, Scott, is that ultimately the company positioning and the positioning of the elements of the company, the things that you bought along the way, emanate from what your business strategy is. And the interesting thing over 13 years is that the company's business strategy evolved over time. And when you get to this new point in your strategy, it becomes obvious that you need to sort of overall reposition what the company is all about. And for us, it was about every 4 years that we ended up doing a major repositioning. So that moment that we had where we repositioned the whole thing was sort of this great opportunity for us to kind of clean up a lot of the underlying sort of brands and acquisitions that we did along the way. But it wasn't always clean and easy. There were lots of times where we had acquisitions that we had done that were sort of hanging out there. It took a long time to get them fully integrated, and some were never really fully integrated. So it was always a complex problem to get through. But at the end of the day, coming up with that overall company positioning was really important for us.
Yeah. I want to make sure that for all of our listeners out there that, you know, when Peter joined ScanSoft, there were about 350 people, right?
And 650 or so.
650. Yeah. Okay. And it grew to 15,000. Peter was a member of the executive staff all the way through that. So huge success in growing that company, Peter. Absolutely. Congratulations on that. So then after that, you got burnt out on the big company and you decided to start your own. So I guess a lot of people may already know you from your days at Plana, being the founder of Plana. You still get your shirt on. It's good. And so you were the visionary behind the whole idea for Plana. Talk to us about what caused that that vision to pop in your head and how you built it out. Because I think the problem that you were trying to solve is still one that's very prevalent today that I think people can get a lot of value from your thought process on this.
Yeah, Scott, it was, I remember the moment that I had that really made this stick out for me. I was trying to figure out sort of what the value was from an investment that we were making. So we were going to a bunch of trade shows in this one business line that I had inside Nuance, and I was trying to figure out, well, what is even the value? Why are we even doing this stuff? So I went to the marketing manager who's in charge of that business line, and I went to her and I said, Amy, show me your plan so I can understand where we're putting our money and how we think about allocating it. And she brings up this spreadsheet, and it was the most disorganized, chaotic thing I'd ever seen in my life. It was a bunch of stuff where she was trying to add all the numbers together. When I said, well, how much did we spend on this show? And she says, oh, I don't know. You got to add this line and that line and the other line. And it was just insane. So she had no really clear way to figure out how much money was being spent on which campaigns. And it was completely disassociated with the value creation process. So the whole planning, the tracking where the money was going, and the tying that to the outcomes was completely all over the place. And I realized that, I mean, Amy was great, still is, but it was just really hard to do. There weren't any real strong tools there. And I just had this thing go off my head, and originally I'd been using for my for personal finance tracking a little tool called Mint. It used to be, it was bought by Intuit for a while. I think they shut it down relatively recently, but it was a really cool little tool that allowed you to automatically categorize your expenses and actually tracked, allowed you to sort of assign expenses to goals and sort of really was a slick little thing. And I said, hey, someone needs to build Mint for marketing. And that was the thing. And literally my investor deck initially said Mint for marketing. That's what we started talking about. So that was the idea. That's how it came up. And then I called this guy, Scott Todaro, and said, Scott, I have an idea that we need to talk about. And we had lunch at the, what do we call that place?
Seasons 52.
Seasons 52 at this restaurant in Burlington. It was about 100 degrees out, I think, if I remember correctly. I remember I started telling you about the idea. And as you talk about that thing, you said you jumped over the table practically, so excited about it.
It was so exciting.
And it was all in. So that was the origin of the idea.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's that idea. And now that, you know, what I'm seeing, having worked with, you know, over 300 CMOs over the last 5 years, it is absolutely critical. You know, the people look at the financial side of marketing, and they look at what the ROI is. And, you know, it's still interesting to me, and you've seen this too, that there's still a lot of CMOs that are not. They're too busy executing and not really seeing what the value of it is. And that spend that they have, it could be the largest discretionary spend at the company. And so I thought what you came up with was visionary. You know, you were looking at the problem the right way. You know, I think you wrote a lot of great content on it to help marketers. And, you know, they should read, you know, some of your chapters in the book that I think really spell it out how they should approach it. So hope everybody gets a chance to do it. And so now you decided you sold the business off to Planful. And now you're off going back into the sick, twisted world of being a CMO after being a CEO for a while. And now you've got this big team and this big company, and you're trying to get this thing to hockey stick. So I'll ask you how you're doing so far.
It's okay. It's interesting. Let me tell you a little bit about that transition that I went through. So, you know, because you were there, obviously, but Scott and I worked really hard and grew the company to a great place, and then ended up selling the company to Planful, who's sponsoring this podcast. Thank you, Planful. and it was actually a great marriage, because Planful creates the same kind of cloud-based systems for planning and optimization. They happen to do it for the office of the CFO, and we had a solution for the office of the CMO. And so it was really a perfect marriage as we started to come together, and I was really excited about that. So it was sort of the right place and the right home ultimately to get the product, now called Planful for Marketing, to reach its full potential. So really excited about that. And it's sort of like sending your kid off to college or getting them launched out of the house for the first time. That's kind of the feeling I had with that kind of marriage. So that worked really well. And then I had to figure out, well, what am I going to do next, right? So I spent all this time and energy growing this company, going through the sales process. And I spent a few months stabilizing the patient, as I like to say, making sure that everything was okay, and the Planful team did a great job getting everything integrated. And then I figured, well, you know, maybe I'll go just do some advising, do some board work, do some stuff like that. And I decided that, you know, it might be fun to do one more CMO gig. And I decided that because, you know, Scott, you know, you and I had written all this content and spent basically 5 years telling CMOs how to do their jobs. And I thought, well, maybe I should figure out if any of that advice actually made any sense. So I thought it made sense to try to do one more and see if I can apply all the stuff that we talked about over the years to see if I can get it to work. So that was the whole idea. I decided that I wanted to pick an interesting opportunity. I had some pretty clear criteria for the gig. I said I wanted it to be at scale because I like CMO jobs that are at scale, sort of billion-dollar plus scale, largely because actually the most important reason, Scott, I don't know if I told you this, is that in that job, you actually don't have to be very competent because all you have to do is hire really smart people who run each of the functions within marketing, and you can do that when the company's at reasonable scale. And in the job is just a little bit different when you're there. So I went to this company called GoTo, which is a great company, and it's a billion-dollar company based in Boston, which is important for me to be able to work out of Boston, and it had been public as a Logmian, that was its former name, and went private via Francisco Partners. So it's a great opportunity to kind of take something that is sort of in this mode where it's quite profitable and we're trying to accelerate growth and a complex beast of a company. But that to me was really compelling and a great opportunity to make sure we could test out some of these things we've been telling people for all these years.
So have you been able to apply any of your methodologies to this company?
Yeah, a ton. And is you know, Scott, I should stop saying as you know, Scott, because I know you know, and it probably gets boring for these people listening. But some of the things that we've talked about over the years, most people who talk to me about reading the book say, there's nothing here that's very shocking, right? There's nothing here that should be brand new for people. Some people who are experienced CMOs say, yeah, this is all pretty obvious stuff, but we should really be doing it. And a lot of it is about one, being grounded by your business goals, having a coherent plan that is where your outcomes are mapped to the metrics that you use to define success of your business goals. And it's fundamentally financially strong and grounded. And those are some of the key principles that we talk about a lot that underpin the book. And I've spent a lot of time doing that. We spent a lot of time talking about things like LTV to CAC and CAC payback period, looking at the value and cost per outcome that we're generating to try to make sure that they actually make sense, organizing our plan into broad thematic campaigns. So these are some of the things that we've talked about a lot over the years that we're applying to the company, and so far so good. It's working quite well.
That's great. Peter, when you apply those types of numbers, are you primarily working with the marketing ops team to do this, or are you trying to push this down to every single person in your ginormous team right now?
Yeah, it's a really important point, Scott, because obviously I work very closely with my head of marketing ops, who's amazing, and he makes sure that we have the right infrastructure. We're actually in the middle of implementing Planful for Marketing, which has been super helpful for us, by the way. So they didn't ask me to say that, but I will. And so that's obviously a great tool for us to make sure that we have some of the right systems in place. But a lot of it is about communicating broadly to the organization the right philosophy to make sure that your entire organization knows why you're making decisions. Your entire organization knows some of the core financial metrics and why they're important. And that kind of education that we went through with the team, I think is probably almost more important than some of the other work that we did to sort of get the more senior people aligned. It was really communicating broadly to the organization what metrics are important, why they're important, and by doing that and focusing the organization on the right kind of improvement, you can actually drive business performance improvement while explaining to employees why you're doing it. They get excited about it because they can start to see the benefit over time, and you get sort of a happy, virtuous circle that way.
I think that's an excellent point that you make. I don't think enough CMOs, A, go to try to identify those metrics, but also communicate it to their team. I think they underestimate their team's willingness to fully understand the business impact of what they're doing. And I think when they do understand it, it just really makes a difference. So I think the last question I'd like to ask you is actually a question that you usually ask other people. All right. And that's, what advice would you give all the other CMOs out there as to what they should be doing to get better? And this, I'm sure you could spend 6 hours talking about it. So maybe limit it to your top three.
All right. I'll try to be uncharacteristically brief, Scott. So I boil it down to make sure you understand the business and the business impact of what you're doing. Most CMOs really understand marketing quite well. And most of them, if you ask them, clearly understand the business. They often don't really spend enough time tying those two things together. So it's really critical to understand the business impact of your decisions and make sure you understand not only what you're doing in the sort of in the present time, but understand how that's going to change potentially in the future. And I'll tell you that one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time talking to people about recently is the difference between running marketing and leading marketing. And as you, if your job is running marketing, your job is sort of keeping the trains on the track and making sure that you hit your targets and all those things, et cetera. That's great, right? But fundamentally, you need to understand where the business is going overall, how the business model is evolving, and ultimately, you need to drive improving efficiency and performance over time. So how do you think about evolving that organization to the point where you're going to get better performance and better results and more profit over time? That's fundamentally what your job is as a senior executive inside a company in any function. So taking that perspective of understanding the business impact of what you're doing, and then understanding what are the drivers to improve that business impact over time so that you can get more and more efficiency in while you're growing the company at the same time. So that's, if you take that approach in general, then I'm confident that you're going to be successful leading a marketing function.
Well, that's tremendous advice, Peter. Well, that was the last question I had for you. So I guess we'll wrap this up. I have enormous shoes to fill. You did an amazing job running the 118 episodes. This is the 118th. And so I encourage everybody to go back and watch past episodes. There's just so much great content that Peter was able to create. And hopefully, Peter, you'll come back. I know you're super busy, but from time to time, you come back and join us, maybe run a couple of these. We can tag team some people and hopefully have some fun with this as well. So
absolutely. And Scott, I'm thrilled to be handing the keys over to you. There isn't anyone I can think of who would be better at doing this. And I'm certainly going to be the number one fan and listening to every episode into the future. So no pressure. And so make sure everyone else out there subscribes and gives us a great rating, which is going to help Scott continue to grow this this great podcast into the future. So thanks, Scott. Thanks, everyone, for listening for all this time.
Thanks, Peter.